10-4 WHM monitoring.
And Bill, this is N0TR, just sitting here looking at the computer and reading the story, and we just come in from gathering tomatoes and watering the tomatoes and taking care of the girls out back.
Well, that sounds like a good project completed. I just finished up rerouting my antenna wires into the house. I took and drilled and chiseled out half a brick to get to the inside, and then cut my drywall and put on an outside weatherproof box. Got my antennas and everything run through it, and I got my new ground wire run in, ground rod hooked up, inside done. Got the outside caulked and sealed, so it's been a good little project.
You find that I call it liquid Scotch 33, electrical tape?
I got it, and a couple of little things to try to help put up that antenna. Hopefully, I'm going to go ahead and put the choke on the coax point and go ahead and liquid tape that up where it'll be ready to go Wednesday, and then all I'll have to do is actually do it on the coax hooking up, so trying to prep everything I can.
Witness is trying to change channels here on the TV. Not interested in bicyclists in the Olympics. Oh, good. There's a... I know what they're saying, so I don't need to hear it. Ah, shoot. Got them all memorized, I think, Bill. Well, that's wonderful. That's some pretty neat stuff, isn't it?
And Gunsmoke with old James Arnez, he was a good old cowboy, good old sheriff. And I'm glad I got my antenna lines rerouted. I had them coming through a little pass-through I made for a window, but that was not the best situation, so I got it all squared away now. And but I'll tell you, driving that ground rod the other day was not any fun. But it's in, and everything's hooked up. Got it hooked to the power ground as well, so all that's done. And I ordered a bus bar to put in the house, and I ordered some of that copper band to ground the station and power supply back down, too. So I think I got everything covered until I find out I didn't.
Yeah, there's always the what-ifs when you get done. I'm going to shut this TV off. Yeah, I used to have all 200 episodes on DVDs, and some of them were Chinese copies, I think. They come from the Bahamas. I bought them a long time ago, and I just didn't find anybody that wanted them, so I took them to the dump the other day. They went for over 20 years. I still love watching them, even if the reruns are better than a lot of this stuff. Well, it's 90 degrees here, but they say it's going to get better. Also, there was a nice breeze out there this morning. Right now, it's 6 mile an hour out of the south, peaking to 11. But I swear, for a while, there was a little bit of north in there. And they said that northern front would be trying to peak its way through. So maybe that was it. The barometer's down a little bit, 2974. But it says the heat index is 98 here, and that sucks. Well, we got 2 buckets full of tomatoes again today, and a small bucket, and a bunch of cucumbers. I give a neighbor come walking by, I give some to him. We took some to the neighbor over to the west yesterday evening, and some hummingbird cake that Bernice made. We give some to Phil and Mary across the street. We give some to Chris and Sandy across the street. And last night we drove up to Jim's and Mary's and give them some, and then Ray come walking by today, and I give him 2 Walmart bags of them. Everybody's pretty well taken care of, I think.
Right. Generosity is a noble character, and I'm glad to hear you and Bernice are so generous, being good neighbors and good friends.
Hi, Bill.
That's the War Department. That's most you get out of her on the radio, usually. Anyways, yeah, we love to share. And Bernice, I think, she's going to make some, what do you call it, salsa out of that. And I bought my neighbor, I seen this Texas Pete was on sale at Sam's there last week, and I bought him 2 big old jars of Texas Pete. I think he'd put Texas Pete on a salad, Bill.
Well, I'm kind of fond of Texas Pete myself. I put it on just about everything. I don't know that I put it on a salad, but it's good on popcorn. You put you a few drops in there and shake it up. It's real good.
Did you say on their phone, OMG, popcorn? Oh, that's sick, Bill. I'll tell you. Well, I used to have a buddy that put ketchup on mashed potatoes, and I thought that looked kind of gross. But you know, Bernice made all their weenies, and you split them in half, and then you fill them with mashed potatoes, and then melt cheese on top and put them in the oven, melt the cheese. Now, I always dip that in ketchup, and a little mustard doesn't hurt either. So I guess the ketchup on the mashed potatoes wasn't such a bad deal after all.
I like a little mustard on my mashed potatoes. It kind of reminds you of what you do Southern potato salad. But, yeah, a little ketchup and mustard goes a long way. Then you can throw a little hot sauce on there, and you're good to go.
Yeah, well, I can't take quite that hot. I like Bernice's salsa because it's not too much of them hot peppers in it anyways. Well, I just thought of something. If you ever run into, I do this when I put a new antenna up. And I don't care how irrelevant somebody tells you it is, and it is kind of with RF, but I always go down to the end of it, and I take a jumper. I got a little cheater I made up that I shorted out a PL259 connector, and I just, I guess it's an SO239 and a PL259. Anyways, it's a short circuit. Make a long story short, you can do the same thing with a jumper. But I jumper out the end of the cable below the ballon or line isolator, whatever it is, the end of the coax, and then I go back and I take a real good ohm meter reading, and I write that down, and I put it in a drawer there. So if you ever get a bad wind storm or something, you start to get intermittent signals and the tuner won't work and this and that, you can go back and look at that piece of paper, and if it says, okay, I had 0.9 ohms or I had 1.2 ohms or whatever it is, if that's changed, it's a nice reference, you know.
Good idea, Tom. I'll give that a try, because like I said, it's a good reference, and when you got that thing up in the air, it's no fun to get up there and redo it if you don't have to, or get up there and fool with it. So I'm planning on putting the connection and the bowing and everything on a rope and pulley where I can lower it if I have to. That way I won't have to get on top of the house and take down part of the mast to get to it. I got me some good rope that's supposed to be weatherproof, UV, blah, 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 and a good pulley, and got an eye bolt I got to put in a section of the antenna mast, and That way I can raise and lower it like a flag if I have to.
Bill, N4IQ got me to doing that, and it usually works. He got me also to buying good pulleys like sailors use, but I don't know with that respect, because they're pretty pricey. You're probably better off just to buy the ones at Lowe's and then every now and then replace them if they get crotchety. But the other thing you can do, Bill, is when you get it all hooked up and up in the air, besides an antenna analyzer, you can go there where you plug it into the radio and take an ohmmeter reading of your entire antenna while it's up in the air. Now, it may seem meaningless, but if that changes, you know something is wrong. And what I'm saying is, when you run RF through it, it's, you know, you're going to get a different thing with an antenna analyzer than you are an ohmmeter. But it's still a nice check for a broken wire or something, or if something's changed dramatically, a connection's gone bad, you know, something's become grounded, and yada, yada, yada. And just take a reading back there, and with that other reading you took up to the mound, just have it all hooked up, take a reading right on a piece of paper, stick it in a drawer. I like to have that. It's sort of like a static test, and a dynamic test would be with RF through your tuner, et cetera, and the antenna in line. But it's still a reference. It's a flat line that says, okay, I was 2.6 ohms. Now I go out there and I see 30 ohms on it, and something's changed.
Yep, that's a good idea as well. I'll definitely do that, because running a quick ohm test is, like I said, it just gives you that reference point. And if something's not working right, you can check it. Like I said, if it goes from 2 to 30, then you know you got something wrong. You got to start climbing ladders and trees, or inspecting with binoculars.
Roger. You know, I've never asked, and this is stupid on my part, but the only stupid question is one that goes unasked, according to a master sergeant I had in school down in Jacksonville, and he was right. And I don't know how to check a ballon correctly. Yes, I can check them, but I don't know what's right from wrong when I'm looking at the readings I get. Now, of course, I do if there's an antenna analyzer, but I mean, with a simple thing like a ballon, you ought to be able to check it with an ohmmeter. But when you run RF through it, you're generating high voltage, and so something that might be ground fault might not be when you're checking it with an ohmmeter, if you get what I mean, Bill. I gotta find that out one of these days, and I know it makes me sound like a dummy. I'll bet W4EEY or Bill would know that, but I've just failed to ask about it. Makes me feel kind of dumb.
I'd say dumb. I would just say inquisitive, and ready to learn a new little trick. So. But yeah, I'm not sure either, to tell you the truth. Since I got mine, I'll play with it with the ohmmeter and see what it shows, and just tinker around with it. I don't believe half of what I hear on YouTube about stuff, but I might see if there's something on YouTube. You never know how correct that is. You have to talk to somebody that has the background and experience to really know.
Have you got a good multimeter, Bill? And the reason I say this is not to be a smart aleck, but I have a Fluke 87, and it has a low ohms scale on it, 0 to 200, I think it is. And I've never, you know, I used to use one every day, but it's been, you know, 10, 12, 15 years since I used it regularly. And in order to measure a low inductive load, you need to have a good multimeter. And I don't know exactly what you got, but that's what it takes to get an accurate idea of a low ohm reading. You know, in the old days, they had the old Simpson 260, and I still got mine, only the newer version. Then they had the 360, and mine shot traps on one of the readout all chips up there, the 8-segment or 7 or 8-segment thing. But at any rate, I still got them. But in the old days, when the first digital meters come out, and I was working with the big motors and generators and stuff, they wouldn't accurately ohm a bigger motor with a real low resistance because it was wrapped with such big wires. But now they will. And I see these guys checking capacitors on the air conditioners very reliably with them now. And that wasn't the case back then. You had to have a capacitor checker. But, yeah, that's... what kind of multimeter have you got, Bill?
Two Fluke multimeters. I couldn't tell you the model of either one. One's about 2 years old, and one's about 15 years old. And I've checked them against each other, and they still read good. They're digital, but they're good meters, or at least Fluke thought a lot of them. They're not cheap by any means. They belong to work. I just happen to be in possession of them, along with a toolkit and everything else I keep in the car.
NHW.
This is N0TR with N4WHM. And good afternoon, sir. My name's Tom. And Bill, you can't go wrong with a Fluke. They are excellent meters. I have that 87. Yeah, you're right. They're about $400 or so. Probably more than that now. Go ahead, breaking station.
TR, this is KE4NHW. Good afternoon to you, Tom. Just got a quick question for you, and I'll let you get back at it.
We can just join right in there. It's Sunday afternoon. We're just having fun.
Play the question. I got to step away from the desk here for a couple of minutes. I was going to ask if you're going to be around the radio for a few, because I'd like to get in here and talk to you and see what's been going on with you, my friend.
Excellent. Just jump right in there. Bill and I was just kind of, he's new and getting his antenna up and all, and we're just jawing a little bit. Go ahead, Bill.
Come right on in. Join the conversation. We're, like I said, we're just chewing the fat. So, talking about multimeters and different types, but yeah, the Flukes there, I think I give $300 or $400 for both of these. Maybe $700 for that first one I bought way back when. But yeah, Fluke makes a great meter, and they have a great warranty program. I've always used Fluke meters since I was at the phone company back in late 80s. So never had any issues out of them. If I did, Fluke was always good about taking care of them.
You get done, if I got that right. It's been so long since I talked to you. Then come on back.
Let me go see what I can help the wife with for just a minute. I shouldn't be too long. I'm also working on the server over here, so I'll be back in here in just a few minutes, gentlemen. 7-3s, and talk to you in about, hopefully, about 10 minutes. KE4NHW, be back.
Yeah, Bill, sound like you're fixed up real good, and that's what it takes. It's funny, my neighbor went down and he bought an Ideal multimeter, and I always tell him if he wants to do something like that, come get me and I'll go with him, but he works down there at Mitsubishi, and he just stops on the way home because it's just up the road from him. And he bought one, and he was trying to find an intermittent in this 67 Camaro. And it's pretty good intermittent. but it's very intermittent. And he went down and bought an ammeter, and I was trying to tell him how to use it for amps, because, you know, you can destroy a multimeter in a heartbeat when you change over to amps, and somebody that's new at it, he knows nothing, they can blow one up real quick. So he buys the $40 one instead of the $129 one, and I went over there, and he said, I just don't know how. I think I was reading amps, Tom, and I looked at the spec sheet on it. He don't read amps.
Yeah, I've been there, but yeah, you get what you pay for, and you have to read the spec sheet, no doubt. A lot of people, I learned DC voltage at the phone company, everything run 48 volts DC, and that was always, you know, backwards from most of your AC, or is backwards, and I still hold my breath sometimes when I do something. I'm always thinking about DC or AC voltage, and now RF, so it's just keep learning new things every day.
I work mostly, probably 85-90% for 480 volt three phase AC, and I loved it. It was dangerous, but I found three phase easier to work with than single phase, and there's a lot of reasons why, but I really enjoyed that in general purpose control and relaying and stuff like that. But the AC theory, Bill, I'm just not, I goofed off in high school, put it that way, and the most I ever got into was trigonometry, and that was very little when that was in A school in the Navy, and boy, that was hard. I'd stay up 1, 2 o'clock in the morning back to school the next day, because the other guys, a lot of them were reservists, and they'd been in college, and they were just coming down there for 6 months to get their reserve training and then going back home. And they could do it standing on their head. And when you were doing stuff like vector analysis and a generator spinning at 3,400 RPM, and they wanted to know how much induced voltage was in this coil at this specific moment, and, oh, brother. It was terrible hard on me, but it was my own stupid fault.
HMID. Yeah, I have to admit, while I'm pretty good at math, it's been a long time since I've used a lot of the theory behind it, and I'd have to research it and probably learn it again on some of it. I know the fundamentals that I still use, but some of that stuff is, if you don't use it every day, it's a perishable skill. It seems to evaporate out of the mind.
I tell my grandsons, they got a mom that's an engineer that can do math standing on her head, and also a dad that is extremely good at it. And I'd look at some of Amy's books when she was in polymer engineering, plastics engineering, if you will, in school and that. And after calculus 4, I think it was, they went to something called statics. I opened that book up and I just shut it. I didn't know what it's about. You know, I knew it was engineering, but I can't imagine people getting through that. It just, algebra was hard for me.
That's all hard for me. I come it up and do it the hard way. Fort Hard Knocks is about the best way to learn it, though. But, I would, if your grandkids are as smart as I think they are, they'll take advantage of their parents and really learn that stuff now, because they're gonna need it as they progress in their career or college or whatever the future holds for them.
Tell them, the more you learn, the more you earn. I said, just make out like you're a thief. Steal every bit of knowledge you can possibly get from those teachers because they're giving up their whole life to give you what they give you, and they can't take that away. If it's in your brain, nobody can take that away. And I got real serious about schooling when they said, Tom, we'll give you a school, but we won't guarantee you'll pass. And if you don't, we got lots of airplanes to wash, toilets to clean, paint to chip, and et cetera, et cetera. That was an attitude adjustment for me. And from that time on, I made it a point, even after the service, that when I got home at night, and you can ask Bernice, I would study for at least 1 to 2 hours electronics every single night. And I did that for years and years and years. And it really paid off. And my old saying, the more you learn, the more you earn, is very true. But I sure could have done a lot better with an attitude adjustment in high school.
And I'd stab you on back, gentlemen.
I'm right on in. We're just still yabbering, so I'm actually going to bow out and let you and Tom talk, so y'all go ahead, and Tom, I'll catch up with you later. You and Bernice have a great afternoon, and I'm sitting outside sort of cooling off from working, and now I'm ready to go inside and set in the AC and finish cooling off, so I'll have radio on here in a few minutes. If you need anything, give me a holler. If not, I'll catch you down the road. This is N4WHM. I'll be clear on your final.
Okay, Bill. Great hearing you this morning. If I can help you out in any way, give me a holler. And I'm starting to hurt, Mike. I've been sitting here too long, and I'm having a lot of lower back trouble, and I'm going to move pretty quick because Bernice says she needs me to help her move something over here. And you can't ignore the War Department. Well, I don't see anything on QRZ, Mike, and so nothing on the radio, and I need to run in the rain locker and take a shower, because I've been outside picking tomatoes. How's your day going?
Going too bad, actually, and by the way, I bumped my power down just a little bit, so if I get staticky, let me know, and I'll bump it back up, but it's not going too bad. I've got a good bit of pain myself. On June 3rd, I had a total knee replacement on my left knee, so I'm, you know, fighting through my recovery and PT and all that. I got to have another surgery on August 9th to fix the problem. I'm not getting my range of motion back, so they're going to take me back in and do some more work and try to get my range of motion going. Yeah, other than that, I've, you know, kind of taking it easy today. I'm currently working on a server running CentOS Red Hat Linux. So, you know, it's, you know, kind of complicated because everything's on the command line. Makes things a little more challenging. And I got to say, I like your statement before. The more you learn, the more you earn. Even if you don't use what you've learned, again, nobody can take it away. I'm sitting here doing right now, but on the computer, but, you know, I weld at BMW, and I won't complain about that one bit because they pay us right nicely, Tom. And Bill, if you're still there, 7-3, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon, but go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'm glad to hear you got back to work, and I'm glad you got that knee fixed. Those usually come out real good. I had to go through physical therapy for the first time here in a long time last week. Oh, she stuck some kind of a big old stick between my legs and had me pull down with one leg and push with the other and then switch it around. And it did help some, but then it come back immediately. And unfortunately, this lady was going back to Hawaii this week, and so I won't be able to get back until next week, but take that physical therapy seriously. It does work. And they said I had degeneration at all levels in my back now, which is not unusual when you're 73 years old. But I got to say, it Doesn't make it hurt any less, Mike. I got to where I can't lift over about 10 pounds.
Goodness, Tom, that ain't good. I hope they can do something to help you with that. I know there's, not a whole lot, when it comes to degeneration that can really be done, but, maybe there's something they can do to help you get through that. I fully understand. I don't know if you remember me breaking my back, but, I fell off the roof and broke my back, so I do understand back pain as well. I'm not back at work yet, actually, Tom. Still doing PT. I don't have enough range of motion for them to let me go back to work, so that's why I'm crossing my fingers for this next, this upcoming procedure in a little over a week. Hopefully that's going to, help get me back on the right track anyway. But, like I say, it's rough, and when I take that PT seriously, I get in there and I push as hard as I can push to the point where, I'm actually hitting my pain threshold. So, I'm still not getting where I need to be. They say that there's something called adhesions building up on the scar tissue, and they gotta take me back in, put me to sleep, and break all that up.
With any surgery, there's a 25% chance that you will have adhesions. I had a surgery come from the gallbladder surgery, and then they had to go back and open me up and do it over because I was bleeding, and so they split me down the middle. Well, 2 years later, the adhesions went around my, intestines and cut them off, and so they thought it had busted, and that in a case like that, I would have peritonitis or gangrene, and they got in there and fixed it, and it didn't. However, they did leave two stitches in my stomach that kind of stick me now and then. They cut one of them out, and I said, I'll just leave the other one there. It's a big old knot there, but like a cat whisker. But it doesn't bother me too much. But I couldn't stand being out of work that long, Mike. I've never missed, I think the most I ever missed was 2 weeks after a very serious surgery. And I went back to work, and to be honest with you, I was still bleeding, but I didn't tell them. But, you got to get back to work to keep that range of motion up. And I knocked my right shoulder out of joint 2 inches. And they put it back in and tore the rotator cuff and the labrum and got 6 hernias, and they fixed that, and I was back to work. In a couple of weeks, I just couldn't lift. But, I know what surgeries are. I've been through a lot of them.
HW, I've had my fair share, and unfortunately, I can't pull that little trick off at BMW because before they'll let me go back to work, I'll have to go through and do a, physical test and all that, so I'll have to have the range of motion. I can't just fake it and go in there and, work on it as I work, unfortunately. I'll be quite honest. I'm missing my crew, missing my welder. I'm ready to get back. But it has given me some time to do some things here. I'm working on the rebuild on this server. The old tower failed. I think the power supply failed. It's not supplying enough power to the processor as long as hard drives are hooked up, because it'll boot just fine. If I disconnect all the hard drives and boot it off of a flash, no problem. So I, didn't really feel like, just getting just a power supply. I've got a new box over here for it. Doing a lot of work to get the drives from the server set up so that they can be mounted into the new machine. And when you're going from a older box to a newer box, that can be a headache on a good day. So, hopefully I'll be ready to start the clean install of the core operating system. Going to be sticking with CentOS 7 for right now, which is Linux. It's Red Hat based. going to be sticking with that for right now. They've kind of redone the way they treat Centaurus right now, and I'm not keen to jump on the bandwagon just yet. I'm going to stick with 7 and review some other Linux flavors as well and see if any of those suit my taste. But, yeah, I can fully understand what you're saying about, having problems with the back and them putting you through PT. Now, who are you going through? What orthopedic are you using?
I guess you mean the doctor is. That's at the Veterans Administration. But yeah, one time I had two surgeries on my foot. And the first surgery I didn't miss any time. And the second one, I had one of those big leg braces on from my knee down to my toe. And I'll never forget, it was like 110 degrees. And I drove a 60-foot high lift over called a Condor, and I brought it up to the edge of a 20-ton crane and climbed over the top of the basket and got down on my hands and knees and took a cover off and was sweating so bad I couldn't see, working on a 480-volt three-phase 50-horse motor controls, and I had that big old brace on my foot. So times they do change.
And that's quite a hefty little zap there. 480, yeah, that will light you up pretty quick. Hopefully you didn't get popped by it, because that's one of those definite change your world or end it possibilities as well. I deal with a lot of high voltage at work. Again, I am a welder, so I'm used to dealing with high voltage. But I'm also smart enough that if I don't need to be around the 480, I don't get around the 480.
Would green burn instantly, but the voltage on those welders where you're working with a like a MIG or that other than TIG. That's all low voltage. Heck, even an old stick welder are about 50, 60 volts. In the old days, they were 80. I don't think the open circuit's even that high now. I have to go look at mine and see. But I worked on welders, Mike, up to 1,500 amp subarcs.
Man, that's exactly what I do use is TIG. You're right, the voltage itself is not high as that amperage, and that can still bite you pretty good. I've actually gotten popped by it, several times. The little starter arc coming off those capacitors isn't quite too bad, but once you get, once you get a live arc flowing, I've actually made myself part of the circuit for a live arc, and I mean, it didn't kill me, but it definitely made me go sit down for a few minutes.
I think as soon as you got hit, the voltage drops down to practically nothing, but it's still no fun. I don't like to be shocked by anything, but even that 1,500 amp subarc welder, the open circuit voltage is very low. It's not very high. TIG's the only one that's got any in there, and that ain't going to kill you out there at the end of that stinger. I used to work on them, but I've worked on them very little. And they were older ones. The newer ones are all inverters now, but I don't think there's much danger of getting killed by one. But now you get a hold of 480, and, you just don't make mistakes. If you make a mistake, you're dead.
It's very true. And, when it comes to anything out there at the plant, we actually have people out there called ESAs. They're like your maintenance and all that. When it comes to getting into any high voltage cabinets, or we need to open up the side of the welder, other than I'll do stuff like change the wire, rebuild whips, stuff like that. But if we have to open up the side of that welder where that 480 is coming in, no, I don't touch it. That's one of those things. It's not in my job description. I'm not trained for it. so I will call somebody who's just a bit more experienced with how not to end up crispy crittered and let them do it.
Worked on a 450 amp, and we had a 1,000 amp plasma also. And it had high voltage, but where you were working at, you weren't going to, you had to be a fool to get into it. But it actually cut underwater. We could cut a plate 20 foot long. Let's see. No, it was 40 feet long and 20 feet wide. And it cut Inconel up to 2 inches thick. But it cut, we had plates that were for large gears and that were, I don't know, 8 or 10 inches thick. And they DNC it and download a program to it. And the operator punches the go button and just stand there and watch it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those. Back in my younger days, I actually did work at a place called Jeffrey and Dresco in Woodruff, and I ran a, it's a flame and plasma cutter CNC machine. And, you know, the biggest I've ever run, I think, was on the plasma side anyway, was stainless. I think it was 1 inch or inch and a half. But 2 inch Inconel, that, when you start talking about that, that is, that requires quite a serious, piece of equipment to cut through that. I've never plasma cut it or anything, but I have machined it, so I'm, you know, familiar with, the fact that Inconel is, just a bit tougher than your average metal, over.
Yeah. We made the kilns that and I wired them, but I also had to work on the electrostatic precipitators and things to get the smoke away from the guys because there's a lot of nickel and chrome in it, and it would kill the welders, basically, just to cut to the chase. But we had to get that smoke out of those kilns, but they destroyed all of the harmful gases that they used during World War I and World War II when they signed a treaty quite a few years back. And we built those. And like the lubricating systems that I wired and we had to pipe them and all, once they were in the room, they were double redundant. And you could never go in that room again because one drop of that stuff, and it could kill, I forget how many men they said. And everything was Inconel on that because they'd drop a artillery shell or a 55-gallon drum of some kind of harmful gas in there, like mustard gas or whatever. We didn't really know. I just know that's what it was for, and they shipped them to places like Tooele, Utah, and there was a place up in Washington or Oregon, I don't know, out in the boondocks. And once that plant was done, that was it. And it was just left there. But it got rid of all that bad stuff, so I was kind of proud of helping do that. But I think the melting point on that is somewhere around 2,800 degrees or so. I believe they use some of that in the aerospace industry where the heat buildup was really severe, re-entry vehicles and such.
Yeah, I could see it being used in aerospace. Now, when I was cutting Inconel, I was, cutting it on CNC lathe. You know, it still took, quite a bit to nibble through that stuff. But, we weren't even told what the part was, what it was for. The only thing we knew is that it was a, government military contract. And that there was absolutely zero room for error outside those tolerances. Everything had to be dead on. But some of the parts we cut were, fairly small. Some of them were actually, quite large. Very nice, would make a very nice boat anchor for sure. But we weren't even told what it was supposed to be used for, what it went to. We were just told, cut it, follow the print, and, your tolerances are your tolerances. There is no budget or close enough for government work on those. So, you know, it was one of those, you know, don't ask questions, just come in, do your job, go home. But, yeah, I gotta be honest, I kind of missed those days. You know, CNC machining was a great. Problem is, you know, you get hired in on the bottom, you know, when they're starting a contract, and when the contract is over, guess where they start cutting personnel from? That's right. And I got tired of bouncing around. So, you know, I ended up at BMW, and, you know, been there a little over 11 years, and, you know, they did me great, get paid great, benefits are great. Yeah, it's a rough job, it's tiring, but, you know, I got to admit, you know, it's worth every day going in there. And, you know, it's also a good, you know, being there that long is a great way to do what I like to call social observations of our new generation. Over.
Well, I think you need to learn a new trade, like PLCs or back to the CNCs or stuff like that, programming or that, Mike. You've been out of work for several years now, haven't you?
Actually, I did go back to work, you know, not too long after we last talked. I think it was about a month and a half or so after we last talked, I made it back to work. Yeah, I worked all the way up until, let's see, what was my last day? I think it was May 31st or June 1st of this year, and then on the 3rd is when I had my surgery. I've been up at BMW the entire time. I think when I went out with my back, I was out for about 4 months with that, and it's looking like I'll be out about 4 to 6 with this knee. But no, believe me, whenever I can be there, I'm there. I enjoy my job. It's tiring. But, you know, I actually do enjoy what I'm doing, and, you know, I'm kind of in an interesting position now because I've been there so long that I've become the senior on my line on night shift. So as far as the welders go up there, the TIG welders on my line, I have the most seniority. So, you know, I try to go in there, step up, you know, try to set the example. And, you know, of course, you know, when we get new people, you know, rarely, but when we get them, I'm the one who, you know, gets the opportunity to train them.
On the order, you need to do something lighter because you're getting all busted up. Mike, I got to go. And good to hear you again. And I'll talk to you down the line. I got to move because it's starting to hurt too much here. Yeah. You take care, 73s. This is N0TR clear.
Well, I hope you get to feeling better, my friend. You know, move around, you know, do something, you know, get some heat on it, ice on it. Hope you get to feeling better. Try a TENS unit. Those things are gold, I have found out recently. You know, talk to your doctor about a TENS unit. It really does help my knee quite a bit. But we'll talk to you later, my friend. And as far as PLCs go, you know, I've actually worked with them just a little bit up there at BMW. Almost everything we do is, well, you know, the welding, but, you know, the line controls and all that is on the PLC. So, yeah, I do a little bit here and there just resetting faults. But, yeah, I'm thinking about doing exactly what you're saying. It's, you know, not a bad idea. Like you said, I'm getting beat up, as it were. Well, Tom, take it easy. We'll talk to you again later. 73's my friend. It's good to hear from you. You know, look me up. I'll probably try to jump on later this afternoon or tonight. Catch you later. KE4NHW.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, I have 3 or 4 TENS units, and I wear one several hours a day usually. They block the pain, but they don't cure it. But they do help. Talk to you later. This is N0TR clear.
Through that, but, you know, that's exactly what narcotics do too, is block the pain, and TENS units are drug-free, so, you know, better option. I am, you know, I've got to get me one. I'm probably going to try to order one here shortly. Short-term disability makes it a little difficult, but, you know, hopefully in the next paycheck or two, I'll have enough I can order me, you know, a decent little TENS unit. Catch you later, Tom. 73's KE4NHW.
Go to Walmart. I prefer the Omron, and if you'll look in the control panel sometime, you'll see there are lots of Omron relays, O-M-R-O-N, I think it's spelled. But they have several different units for about $30, and the pads you can order off of Amazon, and you can order the replacement ones, real cheap. And then they have replacement wires for those things, so you don't have to go back to Walmart. But and then they sell them on Amazon, the TENS unit. But they do have several different types, usually at the big Walmart stores. And I like their different programs, pulse width modulation and such. That cuts them down to a reasonable price. See you later, Mike. N0TR clear.
Well, look, I got to go tomorrow to Walmart anyway. I'll take a peek and see what they got. You go get to feeling better, my friend. Get moving, and we'll talk again later. 73's KE4NHW, clear.
HW, KE5WLL.
VLL, KE4NHW. Good afternoon, sir. Name's Michael.
Good afternoon, Michael. This is Leroy. They also have them at Walgreens. I think I saw there the other day for about $20. They're a Walgreens brand.
I appreciate it. Walmart and Greer, you know, there's a Walgreens right down the road from it, so I'll go take a look at what they got as well. But I definitely appreciate that. I know when I go to PT, that's the way we end my PT sessions, is they'll put ice and put a TENS on it, and that actually helps tremendously after beating myself up in PT.
I understand that. I've used it before and after PT. But, I just looked it up online. You can order them online. They're about $20. You can either pick up at the store or I think get them shipped to your house, but if you pick them at the store, it's cheaper.
Yeah, like I said, me and the wife's got to go out tomorrow anyway. I'll keep that in mind and go take a peek at them. I appreciate you letting me know about that. Actually, the one I'd been looking at was one on Amazon, about $30. In fact, the physical therapist that I'm working with showed me that one and, you know, says it's a good one. So, you know, if it's, you know, everything's right about the same price, you know, I'll just kind of look at the different features on them and make a call from there. Over.
I'll let you go. Wife's calling me in for lunch, so I better get off of here. 73-KA5-WLL.
All right, well, again, I appreciate it, and I will, I'll be back on the radio, you know, this evening. I've actually got to go do the same thing. Got to go up there with the wife here in a minute now that I got this. Yeah, now that I've got to a suitable stopping point working on the server, so I'm going to go up there. We got a few things we got to take care of, and I'll be back down here later. You take it easy, 73's, and like I say, hopefully I'll talk to you again this evening. KE4NHW.